Welcome to Discover Indie Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today I get to talk to the team that made Disfluency. Now that's Anna Baumgarten, who wrote and produced it, and Laura Holliday, who directed it. And I wish we lived in a world where everyone who just heard that knew exactly what the film Disfluency is and is about. But sadly, we don't live in that world yet. Disfluency is, and I don't feel like I'm overstating this, one of the most superb films you're going to see. Every year, I see the Oscar nominees for Best Short, and I can't help but leave the theater thinking that I have seen, on the festival circuit, better stuff than what the Oscars are acknowledging. And Disfluency falls into that category, really, for the quality of the filmmaking. It's probably one of the best written and best directed films you're going to see. And you pile on top of that, that it deals with rape and sexual assault in a way that doesn't demonize as much as it educates. But it doesn't educate in like that annoying preachy way. It educates by just showing us what goes on in our society. Okay, so that's your introduction to Disfluency. Anna Baumgarten and Laura Holliday are super talented young filmmakers. From the moment I saw their film, I knew they were going to be invited onto this podcast. And I was so happy to get them both here at the same time. Now, before you listen, you should go to discoverindiefilm.com and watch Disfluency. It's either embedded in the website or there will be a link to it. And after you've watched Disfluency, you can listen to these two women and find out just what it took to make such a brilliant work of art. All right, but enough of my setup. Here's the interview with Anna Baumgarten and Laura Holliday.
Sketch comedy.
Sketch comedy, yeah, sketch comedy.
Yeah, we were talking about that the other day.
About how we met through sketch comedy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
How it's like a... People are always surprised when we say that because, I mean, because most, like, in the film community, a lot of people meet us through Disfluency, and then we're like, yeah, we love comedy.
Yeah, yeah, that does seem to surprise people. We're like, hi, here's our film. And yeah, we met making YouTube sketches about, like, I don't know, silly stuff. People are like, oh, you're in comedy?
By the way, I saw, I don't know if it was shared on Facebook or something, but I did see your, some of your sketch comedy with the child roommate stuff.
Oh. Thanks.
Hilarious.
That was from a while
I
ago.
I thought that was so funny.
Thank
I don't know
you.
How I happened to see it.
Thanks.
Maybe it was just through a Vimeo link or something. Or
yeah, because that was from a while ago. Maybe
or
I
Funny or Die
it.
Or something.
Yeah.
But I was like, damn, that's funny shit.
Thanks, dude.
Right. And not just because I have an 11-year-old roommate.
Oh, right.
I know, but your great gag is that she's mature and you're not.
Right. But I guess it is kind of just like having a child, sort of the whole idea of the kid roommate. It's like if you're a parent, then that's not really a joke. It's just a thing.
So it was post-college sketchy, man.
Yes. So, so for me, I was making sketches in college just for fun because I did improv for a couple years in L.A. before I went to film school out here. I went to film school at Art Center College of Design, which is like a more visual design-oriented place, and my background is all in like... Yeah, improv and acting, so it was, I wanted to do that because it was
so, like,
harder.
High school you were into acting?
Yeah, so... Okay, sorry, now I'm talking about my life story and we're here, so...
But we're
going to
do
starting.
Anna's
yeah,
life story.
I'm just formally taking the mic right now.
And I'm saying for people listening that this is Laura talking, we're going to get Anna's whole life story right after this.
Great.
Anna, right? Not Anna?
Anna, yeah.
Anna.
Yeah, you got it. Walter calls me Anna.
Really?
Yeah. I love it when he calls me Anna, though. He always has, and I've never corrected him. So, I mean, he knows now.
Oh, I was going to say, does he know?
You've known yeah, Walter was our wonderful gaffer on Disfluency.
Yeah.
And dear friend.
It's good he knows your name.
Yes, he does.
Okay, yeah, so I'm from West Virginia, and I started doing acting when I was, like, a little kid in local theater. I was, like, the kid in all of the, like, local professional shows there. And then I really wanted to get in film, but there was not really any way to do that there. My town was, like, had, like, 3,000 people in it. So I begged my parents for a long time to, like, help me get an agent and, like, figure out film, and I ended up going to this, like, regional thing where they take people who are interested in auditioning to this, like, talent competition in Orlando. It was, like, this whole... I want to write something about it because it was this weird experience of all these people from, like, parts of the South that were, like, looking for their, like, big shot at this, like, Orlando resort. Anyway, but 13-year-old me, like, got an agent out of it, so we would, like, drive to Atlanta for auditions, and I never booked anything it's really hard to have an agent that lives 8 hours away from you. They forget who you are almost immediately, but it was a good experience of like how that worked, sort of. And then,
I mean, it kind of mimics that the kids who live outside of New York can keep driving in for auditions.
Yeah, it is. It's similar to that. I think it's just farther. We were like 8 hours from Atlanta, so you could self-tape. But then if I got a call back, we would just trek down there.
So your parents earned a medal for that, obviously.
They did. They really did. It was very nice of them. But it was also, I just wouldn't, they wanted me to be like, chill out. It was the only thing that I was like interested in, was like doing the acting and film stuff. So it was nice of them to care about that. And then when I was 16, that hadn't really been panning out with, you know, the being able to keep driving down there, and there just wasn't a lot of positive stuff going on, I guess, in my tiny West Virginia town with like what my friends were getting into. And my parents were still being cool and were like, why don't you look at boarding schools? So I found one that's actually out here that's near Palm Desert. Have you heard of Idlewild, or do you know where that is?
I do know of Idlewild.
So there's like a little tiny boarding arts school up there that has like different arts majors.
Really?
Yeah, it's like 200 people on top of a mountain. Yeah. So I went there for 2 years in like their
like film. 11th and 12th?
Or? Yeah, I went there for 11th and 12th grade, and it was like a film-focused program.
That's like early heading out of home, like college experience, like leaving home to go.
Yeah, right. It was basically like doing college 2 years earlier. Yeah. There were some things that were like more, like you had dorm parents instead of RAs. That's what they were called. And like the doors would lock at 10 p.m. and like the internet would turn off at 12. There were some things that were like, more like, you guys are kids. But otherwise it was basically just like doing college early.
Were you a particularly mature kid?
In some ways, yes. In some ways I was very mature. I think I always knew exactly what I wanted to do basically, and was very, very focused on it. It was like, I don't have time for like bullcrap or messing around or partying. Like, I was just very like on a track, but I definitely was like still immature emotionally, and so it was hard to like be away from home and learn all that stuff by yourself, like, you know, just social norms and relationships and all that. It was like an interesting culture to do that, because I was with a lot of like-minded people that were like, they've been playing violin since they were three, and they're here, you know. And so it was people that I feel like were similarly, we were mature in the same ways, and we were immature in the same ways. Yeah.
And the focus was on performance, or was there filmmaking?
For me, it was film. They had a theater program and a film program, and I decided I wanted to do film. I felt like, I think I was just a little over the like Broadway musicals are cool part of my life. Like, I saw the theater program there and was like, I can't be as loud as these people and compete.
Yeah.
Film just had a cooler, like, more laid-back vibe. Yeah, so did film. And then after that, when I graduated, I, like, didn't get into the colleges that were, like, my top choices. And I was like, I don't really know if I want to study film for more years or study acting or what I want to study. So I had a roommate from that school that was moving to L.A. She needed a roommate in L.A. Sorry. I had a friend from that school who needed a roommate in L.A. And so I moved there and just got an assistant job and started doing improv at Second City. And I loved that. So I was like, okay, I want to be doing film stuff and improv stuff at the same time. So I did that. And then after a couple years doing that, I wanted to go back to film school. So I went to, Art Center in Pasadena. And then while I was finishing up, I was near my last year of Art Center, when I met Anna. Pivot.
Oh, good pivot. All
thank
right.
you.
So go back to the beginning. Where'd you grow up?
Oh, I grew up in Commerce Township, Michigan, which is like Metro Detroit.
I don't think I ever knew the actual name of your town.
Yeah.
Because I just hear you tell people Detroit.
Yeah, because nobody knows what a Commerce Township. I also live like at the crossroads of Commerce and Commerce in Commerce.
That's weird.
Yes.
And those are boulevards.
Yeah. There's like, yeah. So...
Because I think I told you, my brother lives in Detroit, so...
Oh, where?
Like West Bloomfield, or Bloomfield Hills.
There's both, but yes. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, he's a posh motherfucker.
Yeah, that sounds about right if you're living in that area. I live fairly close to... I say, like, West Bloomfield is, like, the general area I like.
Yeah, so you grew up in Commerce.
So I grew up in Commerce, not Detroit.
And did you get interested in the arts? Were you an acting kid?
So I actually... have you seen the Refinery... It's, like, Refinery 29 article about Stregonona? Does that mean anything to you guys?
Yeah, you and Leah were sharing it, right?
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever
like an old woman that makes pasta?
Yeah.
I feel like I kind of know what it is.
Okay. Straganona is a children's book, and my teacher wrote a script for it, and we put it on as a play in second grade, so my first acting role ever was Straganona. So when I saw that, I was so hyped.
So you were the lead?
Yes, I was.
Yeah,
in second grade. That's something.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I had dabbled in theater growing up. But really I was more of a jock. Like I played basketball, volleyball, and softball all the way through high school. And in high school I didn't do any theater.
And I can do a handstand on a horse.
That is...
Which is super impressive.
Used to be true. I cannot do it any longer. But
just to validate
you've done it
a jock.
In your life.
Yes.
The fact that you've done that in your life
is
crazy. Really impressive.
Yes, that's... Yeah. So lots of sports...
Actually, the handstand's impressive, horse or not.
Right, I can't do a handstand.
Please.
I miss the fearlessness I had as a kid to, like, just throw your body into things. Because now I'm like, I can't do a somersault anymore. But
I bet you could.
I could if I...
You just don't want to.
Well, as a kid, when you fall down, you just get up and you're fine.
Yeah.
Like, as a grown-up, when you fall down, like, things hurt for a week.
Yeah.
I feel like that. I feel like I felt like that already years ago.
No, I know. Actually, this is the first year that I truly feel like I'm feeling my age and that I'm, like, worried about getting hurt.
Yeah.
But
I don't know your ages, but I'm not asking. So anyway, you lead role
Anyways,
in second grade.
Lead role in second grade. I dabbled in theater, did some camps and things, did it in middle school. Didn't do it in high school until my senior year where I quit the volleyball team to be in the Crucible. And then I kind of went full on in college. I went in for screenwriting because I've always had a love of writing and I've always had a love of performing. And I was like, what career makes sense? Because like being a playwright or being an actress don't make sense. So I'll be a screenwriter was my logic because
it makes more sense.
More sense. But I've always, similar to, and we actually have talked about this too, like having a strong sense of self and like knowing what we wanted to do from a young age. Which I always take for granted that I, like, have always felt, like, a strong pull towards this stuff.
Yeah, I'm really grateful for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So
your college emphasis, you took classes, screenwriting was an emphasis?
Mm-hmm, screenwriting was an emphasis, but I stumbled into production, and production's a lot like a sports team. And I had been, like, a captain of my sports teams in high school at points. And it really is similar to like bringing everyone together. Everyone has a very specific role, but you're still working towards the same goal. So, all my work in like sports and athletics transferred over to my artistic passions, like really well. So I just kind of like slid right into producing and started doing it. And, I produced U of M's like high level class where they do two films, and did a thesis, and my thesis was actually in directing. So I crossed over a little bit, you know, do a little bit.
Because undergrad, you really can't not do everything, right? I mean, no program, undrad program. Oh,
yeah.
They make you, you're going to have to direct once and produce.
So I went to the University of Michigan, and in their film program, like, you'll specialize in something within a class. So they put like crews in classes kind of. So you do some of everything, but I wasn't good at everything for sure. So you kind of find your focus through that, but they don't push you hard in a certain way. So it's really nice in that sense. Yeah.
I was trying to think if we had to do everything. And I guess in our early level classes in college, it was doing everything and like dipping your toe into everything. And then later when you were focusing on your own productions, they weren't going to like force you to do a role you didn't want to do on, like, one of the bigger, more time-consuming ones.
Yeah. I did have a professor. I was in a class, and I was holding a boom. And it was, like, a professor I was, like, very close to, and he came over, and he's like, maybe this just isn't your strength.
Funny. So, I would bet you were crushed, right?
I was so crushed. yeah.
it's tough. Well, and were you, like, team captain of your sports, too? Kind of
like
leadership was part of it.
Yeah. I've always kind of been that kid to take on those roles and then later in high school to, earn those roles. So, yeah, I wasn't always the best player on the team, but I was the best at uniting people and finding a middle ground and helping settle conflicts.
Right.
And I've always been...
Leading by example kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think. But, yeah, I've always been not in a specific clique in my life. I've always been, like, a drifter's friends with all sorts of people, so I think that helps as well.
So after U of M... Did you come out to LA? How long did that take you?
Yeah, I graduated. I did Shakespeare for the first time. I kind of spent a summer just hanging out in Ann Arbor doing Shakespeare. And then I got a job out here as a production assistant. And I, like, flew out the next week. And I actually crashed on couches for, like, 5 months.
I didn't know you did it for 5 months. That's a
while. Yeah. I'm trying to think of... Yeah, well... I mean, I'll do the math later, but yeah, it was for a while.
Was that before Super Jacket or was that at Super Jacket?
Before.
Oh my gosh.
Before and then part of it, but I was also having surgery on my arm,
I remember
so I was back and forth from Michigan.
And you had a network of friends who you could couch surf?
Yeah, so U of M actually has a really good, strong, large film program.
I know more of your U of M film school friends than I know of, like, my own.
Well, and U of M is a huge, huge school.
It's just
one of the biggest public schools in the country, right? Or public colleges, so.
Yes, and it has the biggest, maybe I'm saying this right, U of M has the biggest alumni network in the world.
I was really
impressed with how many people you knew when you were first like, yeah, we're making this film, and like, I have all of the crew that all moved here from Michigan already. I was like, oh my gosh, that's like, it's massive, and everybody's so tight.
Yeah, it's very nice having them out here. So, and then I was hopping around jobs. Now I work in development, so.
And you were doing the casting, and then did you get involved in the sketch, I'm assuming, at some point?
Yes, it was through a U of M friend that Laura had met in a Second City class.
No, I met him while I was in college. This guy James auditioned for one of my projects, and then I think I didn't actually use him, but I recommended him for someone else's thing, and then we just kind of stayed in contact, and then we would run into each other at improv, and they had this like fairly established YouTube channel that had a bunch of followers on it, and they were like, we're rebranding, instead of like just talking about stuff, now we're doing sketches. And they like wanted to add people to their team, so it was like me and a few other new people and Anna, and for like a while we made sketches with them, which was fun because they like brought all the equipment and they like would cut them and they had a platform already. But then they very quickly were like, no, actually our channel isn't going to do sketches, we're just going to like talk about Game of Thrones or something else.
Yeah,
I said that live.
Well, they went through like a year where they were rebranding and many different ways.
Yeah.
I met Laura through.
Yeah, no, they're having an identity crisis, but we met and got really tight through that. So.
You know, it's always a good LA experience to find out that there's people who talk about doing things and don't do them.
Yeah, I mean, they did them for a little while and then they stopped. But you're right. Yeah. That's a very, very important thing to learn in LA because there's
and
so many people.
To sniff out
all
who's
time.
Full of it, it's, mm-hmm. it's a skill.
I've gotten so much better at it since I lived here, and now I am like, I shut that shit down, like, real quick.
So fast.
So the fortuitous meeting was, like, what year? Can you remember?
2016?
Probably, like, 15, right? 16? When did you move here?
No, I moved here 2015.
Oh, so it must have been, like, end of 2015 or beginning of 2016.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds about right.
So, oh, like, really 3 years? Two,
yeah,
3 years,
like
I guess?
Yeah. Wow, I feel like I've known you so much longer than that.
No, it's very weird.
Yeah.
And at that point, what's the first collaboration? Or is Disfluency, like, the first official one?
Well, we did a couple sketches with that group where, like, one of them, well, we had that music one that you wrote, and I direct, or I kind of, I don't know how to direct. Yeah, Disfluency was the first, like, official thing, I guess, that we did, besides just, like, sketchy stuff.
Well, were you writing, I'm sorry, Anna, were you writing, like, the whole time, because your writing was always your focus?
Writing has always been my focus. Laura writes, too. Laura's a triple threat. Do more than three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you both do everything.
Yeah,
but,
you do all the things, too. Yeah.
But I'm just picturing you as the kind of person who is, like, building up a stack of scripts while doing sketches and
you were working
PA-ing
on Disfluency for a long
that.
Time, right?
Yeah. Well, Disfluency took me, like, 2 years, not maybe, just to, like, I mean, I wasn't, like, working on a 10-page script for 2 years, but to get it to what it was, like, something I picked up and put away. But yeah, I'm always trying to write something, and I really enjoy having other people direct my writing, so that's always been a pleasure.
Which is, like, really cool.
Yeah.
Like, so few, not that few, but it's a rare sense of, I don't know, maturity, really, to say I want to see what someone else does with what I wrote.
Yeah. I also am starting to feel like I'm, like, liking directing other, the idea of directing other people's stuff in that process more and more, too, versus always having it to be my own thing from the beginning. Like, interpreting someone's stuff or having someone else interpret your story, I think it's, like, I don't know, it's rewarding in a different way, and also, like, it doesn't all have to come from you, which is kind of, like, a relief if you find people that you actually, like, trust to work with in that way. Yeah.
Absolutely. I feel like it's such a rare relationship to write and direct and collaborate and just get through conflicts and everything. And I mean, everyone knows, like, when you find somebody that you collaborate with well, it's, like, such a blessing.
Yeah. Well, did you share Disfluency with people along the way?
Yeah, I did. I shared it with people and got notes. You know, I talked to people about their experiences and I added some of those things in. So yeah,
I praise you both a lot, but I mean, the script, it's such a well-written short film. Mm-hmm. And I mean, for a short film, the three act structure is kind of perfect, and most short films don't have that. And just all the decisions you made as a screenwriter, I think, are just spot on and extremely well done. And of course, I am intentionally avoiding the topic for now, but we'll hit your subject later. But just your technical skill with the subject is just so great.
Well,
so
yeah, thank you.
Kudos.
Well, this isn't the first. I've written several short films. I won an award for a short film for the script specifically in college. So I feel like the structure and the short form I'm pretty good at. But Disfluency, I like bringing Laura in, like, it, she, like, read the script and she was able to point to things that needed to be cleaned up and tightened up, because the original script I showed you is probably like 15 or 16 pages.
Yeah. I feel like most of my things were probably just being like, how are we going to do that part, though? Like, I was thinking about it from a production way once we started doing that. Like, because I feel like, I think everything that you had in there probably, from what I remember of the early drafts, like, still was a great screenplay.
Yeah, it was, yeah. But just, I don't know, you saw things that I couldn't see in it, and that was rad.
It's nice to work with other people.
Well, and when you first read it, did you immediately want to direct it?
Yeah, and I honestly, I hadn't directed anybody else's writing before, and I hadn't directed anything dramatic before, and I was already interested in it when Anna brought it up, because I love Anna, and I cared about the subject matter, obviously. But I was like, oh, you can actually, like, we could do something really cool with this, too. Like, it was visual, and it was, the moments were really concise, like, it didn't waste any time. I just thought there was, like, so much there that was gonna be fun to explore that I was, like, definitely, definitely down.
Yeah, well, as I said over here, I said to you at the film festival, I'm like, the direction is so good.
Thanks.
I mean, you know, honestly, it blows me away. I'm sure that there's polished stuff in your past, but, you know, I mean, seeing the sketch, because I've seen some of your sketch stuff, which is really funny.
Thanks.
But you're not doing filmmaking in those. You're
right.
Performing.
Yeah, I think that that was another thing that was cool about it, was just getting the opportunity to make something that was able to be cinematic and you know, have enough resources to do it, which was all Anna's smart producing, that she was able to pull stuff together for it.
I mean, super cinematic. I mean, for a short, there's no moment, there's not a single moment in that film where you're like, oh, they cut a corner.
Good. I'm glad, because I think I was still very much learning my prep process in that, and it was, like, so many locations, too, that it wasn't always ample time to, like, sit and think with the DP beforehand in the spaces. So some of it, it was a mix of, like, knowing exactly what we wanted beforehand and, like, being on the fly. So I'm really happy with how visual it was in the end, because the more I direct, the more I'm, like, figuring out my prep process and, like, more anal about knowing everything beforehand. But it's nice to be able to, it is nice to have the skill to adapt when you have to. That'll always be a thing, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did such a good job with the visual medium, especially like stuff with lights. I mean, I'll always
thanks. I mean, a lot of that was
super admired. It was scripted to be entangled in the light, mm-hmm. the light
string light. String light. Yeah. We had a totally different plan for that scene, kind of. Well, we wanted it to be like the whole room full of lights, but it didn't. Mm-hmm. We made it work.
Yeah, it worked.
Super effective.
I'm glad.
Yeah, a lot of people tell me, or not a lot, but a few people have told me, like, oh, I really loved what you did with that. I thought it looked awesome. And I was like, okay, great.
I thought we made it look pretty cool for what it was, but it definitely, we pictured, we were like, huge.
I was thinking, yeah, like, originally I was like, oh, it's like a whole big bedroom. And I mean, your dreams.
If we'd had another day, but that was like at the tail end of a shoot day that had been like full of like, quick, turn the same bedroom into like a string light world.
Yes, because we shot all the bedroom stuff and we had another scene.
Oh yeah,
that we cut. But we had one day in the bedroom and we just shot a lot because there was with the boyfriend and yeah. there was like some resetting and there was a lot of intimate like personal stuff going on.
Yeah, we still shot a ton.
We did.
You shot a ton because you have the class, you know, you have not just a classroom, but a lecture hall.
Yeah.
That you really capture the collegiate vibe.
I'm glad.
I mean, seriously, like the lecture hall stuff totally looks like a big budget movie.
Sick. I'm glad.
Yeah, we're glad you didn't see it.
Hell yeah. You absolutely pulled that off and made me feel like, wow. I mean, it looked like one of those, you know, like it had that back east big college kind of vibe.
That's good. That was hard because I remember before we decided to do it at West Valley, we were like, ah, how do we find a legit college lecture hall? And that was like the scariest one. We were like, maybe a classroom, but that would not have looked the same if it was like a small classroom. So we lucked out.
Yeah. I still think our DP John has like, he has, I will say, wonderful standards. Like he will push me as a producer to be like, I can pull my weight on this, but like help me with locations here.
Yeah.
And another nice thing about being the writer and producer is you're at the beginning and end of the process in a way. So I get to like play God and like create all this stuff. And then as a producer, I get to like pull back and be like, okay, well, I'm going to write things that I can shoot. So it was nice, like writing what I knew that we had.
Yeah, that's true. In the rewrites, it was like, yeah, what do we know we have that we can do stuff with? Yeah.
I think we cut probably. I think I had like three or four other locations in it.
It was all, it all added to it.
You mean that you shot at and then didn't use?
No.
You cut.
It was script, yeah. Yeah. It was stuff that I think was nice in terms of filling in more of the world and more of the minutia of what Jane would be going through and, you know, dealing with that. But it also wasn't, you know, obviously needed to tell the story, but it's just stuff that I think added even more detail, which was nice. So I missed them. But no one else knows.
I know.
and it's super effective the way it is.
Great.
And it doesn't feel like anything's missing.
Okay, perfect.
That's perfect. I also would like to compliment Laura on her...
We're so nice to each other.
Directing.
It's great when a film turns out so well, because then you can say, yes, we're both geniuses.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Things went wrong and... There wasn't finger pointing.
No.
There wasn't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But Laura, as we were talking about earlier about short film lengths, Laura's really good about not, what's the word? Like lingering on things.
Oh.
Right, not pushing the schedule.
Yeah, or being, what, do you know what
lingering, like on set or in the cut?
I
do not want to indulge.
Indulge, there we go.
That's the word I use a lot. I'm like, don't be indulgent, even if it's like cinematic in a long moment. Like, you need to know when to get out.
Exactly, and Laura is so good at that. Like a director in the cutting room. Like, she's so good at being like, that was pretty, or like, that was a nice moment, but we don't need that for this.
That is such first of all, that again shows why it looks so great and it's so well directed.
Thanks.
But yeah, I mean, I refer to that as you don't fall in love with the smell of your own.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that comes from making sketch and doing comedy and realizing that it doesn't work unless it goes really, really fast. And I've seen so much bad comedy and bad short films in my like two film schools and stuff that you can just see where it's like, oh, this could have been great if you didn't stay there past the point. And I'm always trying to think of like, how is an audience seeing this for the first time? Like, what do they actually need to see? Kevin was good about that too. And in the edit, that was a really nice process in the edit too. Cause I feel like I have had trouble trusting other people before of like when they say we're there or not. And I was glad that you kept pushing it to like take it farther with the cut. Cause there was a point where we were like, okay, it's pretty good. But then we ended up taking it way farther than that. And I was glad that you like kept pressing on the gas because I think it got so much better.
So that was Anna's choice to say, no, you keep cutting, keep improving.
There's still stuff we can figure out, yeah.
I will also say that I kind of came in a little bit later in the cut with, like, with more notes, so it's always easy for someone who hasn't been, like, trapped in an edit room to come in and be like, here's some fresh notes.
Well, that was what's needed, though, at that point.
Yeah, so I think the way we managed that was really smart. Like, not all three of us being in the same room the whole time, like, talking.
It's good to get it to a point, kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And that's a producer's job anyways, to stay out and then come in when it's needed.
Yeah, which it was. There were so many different ways to cut that film, too, because it was like, I mean, not that it doesn't match the script, it, like, does, but they were just like, we did a lot of reordering and, like, how short should these snippets be and how do you work in the PTSD, like, flashback stuff in the most effective way that doesn't feel cheesy. There's just a lot of flexible things, kind of.
Yeah, we definitely added, I think the biggest thing we probably, like, did in post was add more moments of PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the moment in the dressing room where she turns, like...
Oh, yeah.
There were a couple things. Can you...
To her friend, a couple, right?
Yeah, she's turning to her friend, and then we flash back to the party, because she, like, moves her head one way, and then we cut back to the party where she, like, moves her head the same way. It's so quick. Yeah, I think there were just a couple other moments
like
that.
But you had that footage?
We did, but it wasn't necessarily meant to be a flashback in that way. It was meant to maybe be part of the, like, longer party sequence, or, you know, we got more than we needed to, kind of, enough so we could cut it multiple ways for the party scene itself, so we used some of that extra footage to become flashbacks.
Yeah, because thinking about it, it's a super effective non-linear timeline, which is not easy. I mean, ever since Tarantino did it, everyone's been failing.
Yeah, that's true. Tarantino and then us, the only ones who have ever gotten
it. Yeah, that's all. It's funny, I can't name the others that have worked. Lots have worked. But
Memento.
It's very, Memento is...
I mean, that's linear, though. It's just backwards, right?
Yeah.
I haven't
actually
seen it in a while.
It's completely, completely linear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't think of it. I don't know.
I love playing with, and it also works, I mean, it works well in feature, but playing with time has always been... something that
because that was on the script, everything you do with time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
which was because, like, I wrote it with flashbacks and these other things, so when our AD was, like, going through the scenes, he's like, well, the scene is part of this, and
oh yeah, it's confusing to map out. Yeah.
Oh, to reorder it to figure out the shoot.
Yeah
you were pulling from, like, various places of the script for every location,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah so we're doing three scenes in every location that were, like, two, like, a minute long scene.
which again demands a good director who's focused in keeping the actors in that moment, you know?
We had good actors too.
They had really good cast.
Yeah, we got really lucky with all of them.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And we had a scripty, which was, that was one of my first times having a script supervisor. And thank God.
Yeah.
That one would have been impossible. Even though she was so, like, fly on the wall until we needed her, which I guess is how good scripties are.
Yeah.
I'd be like, is she doing anything? Oh, you know all the information that I need. Thanks.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, this is how this works.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well, I feel like I'll bring up the subject matter finally. Just to ask my first question about it. So the film's about rape. Film's about a date. Not really a date rape, but a...
Well, date...
Someone she knows.
Totally. So date rape as a general term is usually associated with somebody you know, like a friend or...
Acquaintance.
Yeah. Anybody that you, like, know, especially in this party setting where there's almost this gray area, a lot of that's under the umbrella of date rape, so...
So my question to the screenwriter is one of the things I admire most is how you... start the film with the professor talking about disfluency and the definition. Like, where did that come from? Because it's such a brilliant, I think it's such a brilliant way to bring us into what she's going to experience later. But, you know, it's not even relevant yet. So I'm just trying to pick your brain, like, where'd that come from?
Yeah, absolutely. So, disfluency didn't start with the word disfluency. It actually started with the word sorry, and I had been saying it a lot, like, post my own assault. I've had kind of, my head was, like, cloudy, and I was not communicating very well, so sorry was, you know, coming out a lot. And then I started to think, like, okay, the word sorry, but, like, all, like, like and totally, like all these words, like what the heck are those? Like I just was curious about it. So I just was like Google searching and I was like, what is this? And disfluency is used the most when talking about stuttering or like speech impediments with kids. But natural speech disfluencies are, you know, what we talk about because everyone uses them. They are culturally relevant as well. Like people in France aren't going to be using the same disfluencies that we are. They're saying different sounds, different vowels. So,
which is why it's fascinating that people want to translate this film into Russian and at one point Chinese.
Oh yeah, that's true. Which we just were contacted
to have it dubbed or
yeah, or like, so, like, yeah, I don't know exactly how they want to do it or if they want to just do captions, but, yeah, by someone in Russia. At one point, someone in China was interested, but we were kind of like, that's interesting because it's such an American... Like, I don't know if this will translate well because it's so about the English language. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, the disfluency part is.
The disfluency
part. Not the rest.
Right, exactly.
Sadly.
Anyway. Yeah.
But I will be curious because I... Like, Jane, we used those disfluencies, like, in the very beginning in the lecture. He says, for example, and then we cut to Jane walking and she says, I wonder if, like, they'll insert... whatever a Russian disfluency would sound like that's more appropriate. Not as hard of an but maybe it's like an eh.
Oh, that'd
or
be
like,
cool.
I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If they really understand the concept and come up with the right things, yeah.
And there was a version of the script with a longer, like a longer professor lecture. Because it's, I mean, disfluencies are also complicated. Like there are filler words and there are... I forget what the other one is called. Wow, I'm hearing my Michigan accent really hard.
I'm not.
Okay, good.
I don't think I really am.
Good, then maybe I'm just making up. But there, it is a little bit more complex. So, like, some words that are just more like tones aren't the same as filler words that have contextual meaning. Like, me saying, like, totally, like, in the middle of a sentence means something different than if I were to say sorry. Mm-hmm. Like, it just, you would use them at different times. They're not interchangeable, I guess.
Yeah.
But we cut that.
But interestingly, it's something that you researched and found yourself post-college. Because, you know, like any dumb film viewer, I watched and I'm like, wow, she must have had this in a class.
No, yeah, no. So I researched on my own, but I did reach out to people. I'm always on Facebook being like, hey, is anybody a speech pathologist?
Yeah.
Does anybody?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so I ran it by a speech therapist friend who was like, yeah, this all makes enough sense. You can do this.
And that was one reason, too. It was nice to put her in a classroom that was... It was a lecture hall, but it was also, like, a theater, and we had her studying theater, where it was like, okay, what kind of class would you, like, reasonably be in this? Or, like, I think it was linguistics was the class, even though we never, like, say what it is, but you feel like, I don't know, diction and... speech and just being in a theater setting made it feel less random.
And it's so interesting with what we're dealing with now in our society with harassment and assault and rape is that you start with this older male figure, authority figure. I mean, that's not an accident, right?
No, it was not an accident. It was also not an accident to make that figure like a father figure almost towards the end. I mean, maybe not to that extent, but to have all of these men who are well-meaning apologizing, there's a lot to apologizing where the thing has already happened, you can't undo it. So I think that created a lot of interesting emotions for people seeing characters that they liked apologizing and also kind of being a part of the culture of it in a
yeah.
weird way.
Yeah.
And I liked the, I don't know, the subtext of a man narrating it he is a man that you like, and we liked showing, you know, we weren't going to only show one negative male character who's the assailant. Like, it's nice to show that they're to just show these different types of people and how they fit into her life in different ways too. It's not like, I don't know, he had a good presence in Jane's life.
Yeah, although interestingly, before he's hard on her at first when she's experiencing that, instead of
yeah.
sympathetic, or he doesn't show any empathy because he doesn't know enough. But besides mm-hmm. that, but yeah, there's that moment where you're like, God, he's not even giving her a break.
Yeah. I feel like we had, did we have another professor scene or, like, some longer
time? Some longer moments where it felt more like he's hard on her because he likes her or sees potential in her or something. But it doesn't, I don't know. We have in there what we need. Yeah.
You didn't need all that subtext.
No. Mm-hmm. But definitely having an older white man's voice also intruding the actual insult or assault in her memory, in her mind, that was intentional.
Which is good writing.
Yeah, girl.
On a really hard subject.
Yeah.
I mean, you know is not an acceptable thing for me to say, but sometimes I do. But
it's acceptable. It's just
like and in the world of the Asaris, I think we talked about it at the Q&A too, is, I mean, when you show the assailant, apologize.
Yeah, and I don't know if I said this then, but I actually did have my assailant, like, apologize to my face and kind of have this whole thing of, like, it's like, oh, no, like, I, like, dated a girl once who this happened to. Like, I can't believe I'm this guy, this whole thing. And it was this moment, like, I, to this day, do not know how I feel about it. I mean, like, I can't put a word to it, but there is something to, like, something has happened and you cannot change it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no way to change it. Yeah. So that came from a real place. I actually had a male friend read the script, and he's like, you have to cut the part where the assailant, like, where that guy apologizes. Like, why would he do that? It makes no sense. Like, you can't have that. And I was just like, excellent. We're going to keep it.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank God. Thank God you kept it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it means so much. I mean, and it... Modern news aside, I mean, the one thing I really wanted Kavanaugh to say was, I don't remember it. It wasn't important to me, but my God, if it did happen, I'm sorry.
That would have changed everything about my
perception. That would have changed everything, right?
Agreed.
But instead, like, fine, political denial. But, like, if you just said, you know, I mean, what is so... Okay.
Well, I have...
But, I mean, that's what's so tragic, right?
Yeah.
Is the denial. And the fact that your assailant's not in denial, I think, is really powerful.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I think...
And realistic.
I think, yeah. And I think also it's, like, having someone apologize and... you know, state that their intention wasn't bad, it's important to also know that it's like you said, something happened and you can't change it. Like, you know what I mean? It's not about the intention. It's not about anything you do afterwards.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what you do when you're drunk has repercussions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because consent, I mean, consent is sober.
Yeah.
A person has to be of clear mind to give consent. And what a young man does or woman does, like you said, I think you said at the Q&A that assault goes many ways.
Yeah,
many ways.
But yes, what you do, the I had a couple beers is not an adequate defense of any behavior.
No. I would love to have people not widely culturally think that that is a good defense anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, I thought that. I honestly thought that all through college, you know, all through high school and college. And I, you know, come from a conservative background, and I wasn't really exposed to a lot until college. So I had judgments and things that I thought, and things that when I would see things happen, I would think of people a certain way.
Like a little bit of victim blaming?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Totally. I mean, yeah, I just didn't have a lot of exposure to any of these kinds of situations. Then I got to college and I was observing a lot, and then I was learning a lot. So, like, my first year at college was, like, a huge learning experience.
No, it's really easy to victim blame.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So I went to college in the 80s, and we started the Take Back the Night marches. And we thought we were going to fix this problem, by the way. So it's pretty...
Thank you for marching, though.
It's doing good work.
That's important, though.
Yeah.
It was a first step.
Yeah, that's...
But, yeah, we actually thought, like, maybe it would change things. And I guess it hasn't had any effect, but at least later generations are confronting the problem more directly.
For sure. I mean, my brain just stopped working for a second. I do think that, like, I take for granted that I'm in a bubble in LA where I'm with pretty well informed and, like, you know, woke people. And the circles that we've been showing to Saluency in are probably, like, mirror that a lot, too. But I have definitely, the conversations we've had with guys who've seen it and just around the subject in general have made me feel like people are, like, becoming more aware. Not that, I don't know. But again, I don't know what it's like if I go to a university in the middle of the country. Like, I know those problems are still there, but I definitely have hope that our generation is at least yeah, conversing about it a little bit more mm-hmm. and a little bit more head on.
And there is, I do, and with the internet and social media, I feel like there is more conversation happening and it's more accessible and you can teach yourself a lot of things where I think past generations haven't had as much information. I mean, I know they haven't had as much information as we do now.
Right.
No. And we weren't aware of prevalence. Mm. And I guess we still don't really know because things are reported at a very small rate. Mm-hmm. For various reasons.
So I get so bummed. I get so bummed about the Kavanaugh thing when I think about it too, because I think that it would have been such a positive step for history to formally say that, like, I don't know, formally stand with, not him. Like, I don't know if you've listened to any of the Daily did like a interview with a bunch of teenage girls about how they felt about it, and then a bunch of teenage boys too, and it was really interesting to hear their takeaways from it, and just the fact that he got confirmed anyway, I think is going to have a lasting impression on a lot of boys who are listening. Mm-hmm. So that's depressing.
I would say that I hope something Disfluency shows is PTSD, which is it's an effect on your brain. It's not like people are choosing to dwell on certain things, right. Or it's not an active choice. It is something that, like,
physical, physiological.
Yeah, like, it is, yeah, it's a physical change, you know, like, so it's just frustrating.
I remember when we talked about the scene where Jane sees Mark on campus and they, like, pass by, which we actually, like, we've been talking about wanting to get that scene, but I don't think it was actually scheduled or, like, on the script. We, like, decided to just get that.
On the day of, we, like, talked about it.
Yeah, and it's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. And I remember we did a bunch of different takes with Mark because I sort of felt like, okay, she's affected, let's just show him walking on as if nothing's wrong, like, very, very easy. But then I think it was your idea to, like, get one where you split the difference a little more, where it's, like, you can't really tell how he feels about it. So I love the one that we landed on, where it's, like, you can tell that he kind of sees her, but it also, he doesn't have to do anything. Like, he doesn't have to stop and talk and just, like, walks on while she's stuck there. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, that.
Yeah, and is his sorry sort of in the context of, like, he'd just been confronted? Like, it feels that way.
That's how I felt.
Yeah, that was the intention with that shot.
Yeah.
I think.
And again, you didn't need to show a whole scene.
No.
You didn't need to show what she said.
Right.
You show his reaction, and we know.
Mm-hmm. I even, like, confrontation, but then there's also an aspect of, like, a confrontation from her, but also a confrontation from him, because I feel like these things, when they come out, people start to hear about it and know, and so, like,
that's true, because this would be in the timeline of everything that we didn't show within her story. This is after she's gone to, like, campus police and everything, so it's like if he even got word of it.
But also, people at the party are like, they hooked up.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, he could have even thought it was great and come back to her. I don't know. There are, like, plenty of reasons I think that could have ended up at that situation. I kind of like not having all the answers filled in.
Yeah, I agree.
We just had enough of the, you know, emotional context to, like, get those moments.
Mm-hmm. Answer a lot of questions, ask a lot of questions.
Yeah. That's what makes it such a polished, rewarding film to watch, like, even repeatedly, which not a lot of shorts are good over and over and over again, but as someone who has to see things over and over again,
right. Yeah, yeah,
I have
you're
to
the pro
say that I absolutely
shorts.
Appreciate something that's that well done, even if it makes me really nervous as someone with an 11-year-old girl
right.
who's raising, but.
And I don't feel like this is an issue that's, like, starting to happen. I just feel like it's, the bubble's been popped. It's, the conversation is starting long overdue. And when I was talking about, like, women being informed and knowing things, I'm just talking about, like, my own worry. Like, I'm never going to stop being worried for people. Like, it's just because it's the way it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You just have to be honest and educate them, show them your film.
Yeah. It's about, I mean, we got to get to the boys. I wrote this for men. It was not intended for women initially, or survivors, I should say, because it could be, you know, when someone's like, oh, a film about rape, it is from her perspective.
Yeah, if you've gone through something similar and it's a film about that, it could be triggering, even though people have thanked us for reflecting their experience.
Yeah, totally. And I've, yeah, it's definitely triggered friends of mine and all sorts of things, and I'm glad we have our trigger warning.
Oh, were you going to say more about it being for guys, or no?
No, just, it's, I don't want, or I guess what I'm afraid to do with conversations around assault is not to talk to men.
Yeah.
And not to just be like, F you, like, shame on you.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's, it needs to be a full conversation. And I also have a pretty, I come from a conservative family, and I feel like I have a pretty good background of talking to people from polarizing points of view and having an actual conversation. So that was also the intent of it, was not to be, it's not intended to be political per se.
Yeah. Right? And it's not confrontational.
No, it's literally just supposed to be a capturing of one experience in a way that could be empathetic, I think. And I think I was refreshed by how many guys did say that, and how many guys reached out and said that they, like, understood, and that they, I was glad people could empathize with Jane instead of just empathizing with the other characters, but I mean, they could empathize with all of them.
But I mean, yeah. She has a good boyfriend. She has, you know, the boyfriend is clearly a good guy.
Even though some places didn't think that, Refinery 29.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Well, he says the line, and this was extremely intentional. Yeah.
You owe me one.
You owe me one?
But it was, like, in a joking way, just to show that it's casually within the culture that we say things like this.
And had it not happened, it would have been a light moment within a couple.
Right.
And he didn't have the data yet. He didn't know.
Yeah, see, that's what we were going for. But also showing that, like, things like that are things that we just say casually, like, in our culture. But, yeah, we thought it was interesting. Just, this was the only article, or the only perspective I think that reflected this, but one person was like, this guy's a jerk in the article about it, and we're like, oh, interesting take on it.
Yeah, I think that one moment did annoy people.
Yeah,
but I think if it was in a different movie, I don't think it would have annoyed them. Like, if they had been playful banter, like, no, I owe you one, will you owe me one?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. People literally say that type of thing in real life all the time. Yeah, yeah.
And it is playful. He's not saying it in a threatening way at
no.
all. In fact, you can tell by his tone that if she says next week, he's not gonna take a stand and say, no, you owe me one right now. Like, it was just playful. He's just a nice guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Glad that came across to you. Because we had to cut down some of his stuff, too, where we saw him being a nice guy even more. But
Yeah, we did shorten it. Because we were worried that moment would come across too hard. I'm glad it didn't. Yeah. I don't think it does, but we were like, we should put in the extra nice stuff just so we
add in some more Yoshi that the story didn't need. But
again, that would have been, you know,
too much
in the podcast realm, just because Disfluency you finished well over a year ago, right?
Yeah, we premiered it in March 2017.
Wait, really?
2018.
Must have been 2018.
No, it was 2018. Yeah,
I'm like, what
I'm
are
crazy.
You talking about?
Okay. It was less than a year ago.
Yeah.
Really, premiered in March? Because I thought it had a really long... Because we showed it in June, right? Yeah.
Was it really that early?
So we were only 3 months in your run?
We released... Yeah, we released it online in March.
Right.
I don't... What was our first festival? Oh, no. We did.
At the end of the year before... I don't know. Go ahead. I don't know who I am or where I am anymore.
We had our first premiere at...
And you're spilling water.
The TLC... TLC or TCL?
Chinese Theater.
The
TLC, the Tender Love Care. The Chinese Theater.
Yeah, we had a premiere at the Chinese Theater on March
11th.
It's TCL.
What's the L for if it's the Chinese Theater?
No, it's TCL Chinese Theater.
Like, TCL is the company that bought it out.
Okay.
It used to be MAN.
See you later. Okay,
now
cool.
It's something else.
I was like, that doesn't stand for that.
Did you premiere there as part of a festival? Or?
We did, part of the Indie Night Film Festival, which is awesome because I have been looking at, like, I don't know, I've been, like, looking at theaters to do a premiere, and then we got into this and we were like, yes, that can be our premiere. So we premiered there and released online in March. It has been less than a year, but yeah.
And then you just kept, because you played a lot of festivals.
And we're still going, actually. We're still waiting to hear back from some stuff.
Sure,
which is nice.
Yeah, because just the more people who see it, the better.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's definitely reach for this. I mean, reach for every film, but, like, we're really trying to get eyeballs on this in whatever way we can. Hopefully in Russia and China.
I know. That's why, like, when someone messages you from Russia and says they want to translate the film, we're like, yeah. Great.
Yeah.
As many eyes as possible.
Right. You're like this close to open sourcing it and just giving it to the world.
Yeah, I guess.
Mm-hmm. It's
online for free. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. so many people want to see it, they can see it. So. Yeah.
And still writing, still directing, making, what's kept you busy?
Well, end of last year, I had a web series with Comedy Central come out, which was really fun because I got to direct it and act in it, and I wrote it. So it was like 3 episodes about modern dating, not a dark twist on modern dating like Dissonancy, but just the annoyances of modern dating. So that was cool because I got to work with Comedy Central on it. And then I'm trying to get into directing TV is like kind of my next step while writing writing some TV projects with friends and trying to figure out a feature script. So staying busy with all of it.
And I think I saw one of the dating ones.
Maybe three different ones.
It showed that night.
Which night?
The night I bumped into you guys.
That was actually a short film that we made. That was our last short that we made together I'm still changing.
Oh, so that wasn't part of the dating thing?
No. Similar subject matter because it's all I've been writing about. But these are like a little lighter and much quicker than that. But that short film we are still messing around with after we did that first screening. We're just changing some sound stuff and we're figuring out premiering that and yada, yada, yada.
Oh, yeah. That'll be this year's.
This year's one that we are pushing out. Yeah.
Is that another one that you wrote and produced and you directed?
She produced it. Mm-hmm. I wrote it and directed it, yeah.
Wrote, directed, and acted.
Yeah.
Right. But she's your Ace in the Hole producer when you want someone to make sure.
She produced it and also was like, when you're acting in your own thing too, you just like need someone whose instincts you trust on set too. So not only was she like running the little production office and making sure we didn't get kicked out of the apartment building and like all of those things that are necessary for production to go shoot, I was also like, Anna, can you look at monitor? Like, did I like this one? Tell me if I liked it.
She liked it.
Yeah. There was a lot of like mutual or a lot of reliance on her in all facets of that short. So.
Yeah. It goes back to being nice to just have people on set that you trust and you can just ask. And also, like, when you're unsure of something, they'll, like, come up with what you think your next idea would be. Does that make sense?
Wait, say it again? Probably, but I don't know.
Like, I almost, this sounds lame, but you know when people, like, finish each other's sentences, it feels like we finish each other's creative thoughts?
Yeah.
So, like, we'll be like, I'll be like, oh.
The same thing's wrong.
We think something's missing, and then you'll be like, this is what's missing. I'll be like, oh, yeah, you're right,
that's true. We've done that a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It almost sounds Coen Brothers-esque, like when I've read about their relationship on set.
That's great.
Cool.
Yeah.
We're the Coen sisters.
There you go.
Whose last name isn't Coen.
Yeah. And you're still great. Writing?
Yeah. So I'm working on a feature and a pilot right now. I currently work in TV development in scripted and unscripted. As a development manager, so that's been keeping me very busy. Lots of things.
Yeah, you got real Hollywood jobs. Something like that. The kind of jobs with the long hours and the it's rough on the young people.
Sure.
But they think if it's not rough, they're not helping you enough.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah. So doing that and trying to write before and after work.
And you might be writing and acting in a short here too, right? For the next short, we make another one.
Mm-hmm. I definitely my goals this year. I want to direct a short and I want to act in a short and have those be two separate shorts because right, so I can't do
it. You are going to get pushed in front of that camera.
That is the plan.
Excellent.
I'm scared.
She's a great actor. She does lots of theater too.
I'm used to stage, and stage is nice because you can like leave it there. Like, it's the night happens and it's over. It's in people's memories, however it is. But film, just play it back. It's spooky.
You'll do great. Then, yeah, you just have to get used to looking at your own face, which isn't fun.
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that part.
Okay, I'm just going to go ahead and sound like, and I know I make fun of myself for this a lot, but I'm going to let myself sound like a really old person and just say that meeting Anna and Laura, seeing the kind of work they're doing, seeing their films, it really makes me optimistic. I mean, this young generation of filmmakers is making the most of their talents and dealing with really important societal issues. And, you know, a lot of people tell you that's what art's about. Okay, I'll jump off of my soapbox now. So that I can tell you, go to discoverindiefilm.com. There you can watch the brilliant film Disfluency that Anna and Laura are responsible for. You can also watch about 30 other great shorts. They're all at discoverindiefilm.com, where you can also get links to great feature films, all independently produced. And if you're into social media, I'd love for you to check us out. It's at DIFWINS,
at Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at DIFWins. And as always, I need to mention Film Invasion Los Angeles comes up every June. In fact, we just booked the theater for June 7th, 8th, and 9th, I believe. And the Sherman Oaks Film Festival comes up every November. That's not booked, but someone should probably get that booked sooner rather than later. But I'll stop talking to myself and just thank you for listening.